with CJ Griffin.
Good afternoon, may it please the court. I do believe that CPANG is a public agency, but I'm going to talk about that last because I want to talk about what would happen if CPANG isn't a public agency.
Or leave us in suspense.
Yes. So with that, I'm going to talk about this notion that you could file a request with all 21 prosecutors. I'm going to talk about that last and just first say that if the CPANG is not a public agency, then we have serious concerns about the extensive use of public resources, and in particular, the use of assistant prosecutors. And I counted more than three dozen cases arguing and entering court appearances on behalf of the CPANG, and that's in direct violation of NJSA 2A:158-15.1B, which prohibits assistant prosecutors, as Justice Wehner after alluded to, from outside employment unless it's approved, but outside legal services can never be approved. So they're prohibited from representing other private organizations or entities in court proceedings, and that they frequently appear before this court. And in this case, it was not just the assistant prosecutor that entered an appearance, but the Mercer County Prosecutor's Office itself was counsel of record. And that's unlike any other private, the government would never represent any other private organization. And the reason why this practice has gone on for years, I think the first appearance that we found was 1986, ironically, in a public records case, Loigman versus Kimmelman, is because the county prosecutor's office and the and CPANG are essentially one in the same. There's not really a distinction. And so I suppose I'm skipping ahead a little bit, but I'm planting that seed that they're one in the same, that sometimes the tests that we have currently don't work, which is, I imagine, why we're before this court. But I want to go back to the notion of putting aside the statutory violations by the use of the assistant prosecutors, the possible ethical violations of and misuse of public property by using these extensive resources.
Do you really want to turn this argument into a question about the ethics of those who proceeded in this court, or should we focus on the statutory language and put that to one side?
We can put it to a side. I think it's worth mentioning, though, and I think it was revealing that the fact that government attorneys from the county prosecutor's office represented them. It's just unique. It doesn't happen with any of these other associations. The government doesn't represent private organizations elsewhere. Okay. So going to two different consequences of finding that CPANG is not a public agency. The next one would be that if CPANG is a private entity, its communications with the government, most likely the Attorney General, would not be subject to any privilege. And what I mean by that is the deliberative process privilege is probably the privilege that the Attorney General would likely use the most. It would exempt conversations, frank discussions of policy making, back and forth email exchanges about policy, draft documents, and those sort of things. For that exemption to apply, it has to be intra or interagency. So when my friends at the ACLU communicate with someone from the Attorney General's office or the Attorney General, as many other nonprofit policy organizations do, they know that their communications could be subject to OPRA. No privilege applies. So if CPANG is a private entity and not a public agency, I don't see how CPANG communications with CPANG could be confidential. If it is a public agency, then the use of the prosecutors, the use of the resources, and the exemptions apply. The communications, the deliberative process privilege, other privileges that apply to intergovernmental conversations would apply. So we think that's important. I discuss it more in my brief. Regarding the practicality of the 21 requests to prosecutors, it sounds simple, and I do argue that as an alternative in my brief as well. I think it's point three. It sounds simple, but there are some serious practical problems with it. First, it's very easy to go to one organization and get the documents that they have. It's much more difficult to have to try to find out which of the 21 prosecutors has the documents. Maybe a prosecutor missed a meeting. Maybe they weren't on that committee. Maybe they got rid of their copy. So you have to chase the documents, and they're not in a central repository. They might not be complying with state records retention laws because it's unclear if CPANG itself isn't a public agency. do the records retentions laws for its minutes or bylaws or any of those things apply to CPAN? So there might not be, you know, prosecutor might get a document and discard it because the records retention law might not apply in those circumstances. It's unclear. But if we walked away from here today with what we would consider to be a loss, and that loss was that this court made it clear that everything that the prosecutors are receiving from CPAN, doing CPAN business, is a public record because they were in their official capacities when they're, even when they're working within that organization, and that those documents should be maintained and produced pursuant to OPRA, then we would at least still have the transparency that we need.
That's not before us. The specific documents that are an issue are not before us. I mean, if you're asking that, if you're asking the court to say, if hypothetically it found that CPAN is not a public agency for purposes of OPRA, that the documents nonetheless have to be produced by the 21 prosecutors. We haven't looked at the, at least I haven't, certainly evaluated the, it was, as I understand it, we have one issue before us, and that's, is CPAN a public agency or isn't it? The court's not in a position on this case in which the categories of documents have, are not in the cert petition.
The categories of documents, so if the court found that CPAN was a public agency, presumably there'd be a remand, so there could be a ruling whether or not the documents would be subject to OPRA.
Right, but all I'm saying is we have one issue before us.
Correct, but in Vary, the court made it clear that the way to get records from the volunteer department was through the fire district. And so what I'm suggesting is that the court should make it equally clear so that we're not back here where the prosecutors are arguing or where the prosecutors deny requests, and that has happened, where the request, where it was, this is CPAN's record. Some prosecutors' offices have fulfilled a request for communications that related to CPAN, and not all of them have,
Justice
though.
What Justice Patterson's getting at is, we don't make advisory opinions.
I don't think
we'll rule on the issue before the court, and then people will proceed accordingly.
I don't think it would be advisory any more than Vary was advisory when the court suggested that is the way that you have to get those documents through the fire district, which is subject to OPRA. But again, so then that could be, if the court isn't going to make that ruling because it deems it to be advisory, then that would be a danger in the ruling.
Didn't think that's what you were asking for, but okay, I got you.
So that would be a danger if the court isn't willing to say that the documents could be obtained through the county prosecutor's office because they do meet the definition of government records, then that means we have to litigate this all over again and battle it with the county prosecutors as to what is and isn't within their position subject to OPRA. So I want to go back to why CPAN is subject to OPRA. And I disagree with Ms. Thompson that it's a political that the county prosecutors are political subdivision. It doesn't fit. I think in other jurisdictions, there's been a court or two that have stretched the definition of political subdivision to make it fit. It doesn't fit with the way that New Jersey has always deemed a political subdivision to be. But I think your questioning, Justice Wiener, after was so on point about the county prosecutor itself being subject to OPRA and perhaps the CPAN being more an instrumentality of the executive branch and the governor and the attorney general. And, you know, to me, the worst possible outcome in the world would be if we walked away questioning whether the county prosecutor's office was subject to OPRA. I would have lost about a decade of work trying to make them transparent. I'm hoping the court doesn't find that to
general
be
question. Obviously, you are probably the most, one of the most, if not the most experienced litigator in the state on this issue. What is the statutory basis for the county prosecutors being subject to OPRA?
So I was looking at the statute to say that. No county prosecutor has ever disputed that they're subject to OPRA. There's, I can cite half a dozen cases at least that are published that involve county prosecutors. I think it is the fact that they are a principal department of the executive branch. They fall in this unique nature where on one hand the county is paying their budget, on the other hand there's plenty of case law that says they're executive officers, they're the principal representation of the executive department, and so that's why I think we find county prosecutors subject to OPRA, because
but a principal department isn't that the cabinet, I'm sorry, just wait a minute, isn't that the cabinet, the departments?
I don't know, I don't think so. I think it's talking about
How about office? Are they a division, board, bureau, office, commission, office? Office of the county prosecutor in the executive branch?
They, perhaps, but I think in my brief, I did not brief political subdivision before this court. I briefed that the CPANJ is really an instrumentality of the attorney general and of the governor. And that's because CPANJ's membership is appointed 100% by the governor. He picks who the members of the CPANJ will be by picking who the county prosecutors are. The attorney general controls them in the sense that if the attorney general did not think that CPANJ could use, or that the county prosecutors can let APs represent CPANJ, the attorney general could order it to stop. The attorney general can supersede county prosecutors. There's this whole process.
Let me stop you with you. I'm sorry, Chief. Go ahead, please. CPANJ is an instrumentality of the governor. When the governor appoints a prosecutor, I suspect it's similar to when the governor nominates a judge. The governor doesn't talk about what organizations you might end up involved with. The governor doesn't say, I appoint you county prosecutor for the following term, and therefore that makes you a member of CPAP. CPANJ.
I think the admission has to be here that it doesn't necessarily clearly and expressly, just like the county prosecutor, I don't think, fits within the definition. And you made a statement earlier, Justice Patterson, that no one's ever come to this court before asking the court to ignore the definition. I would disagree with that. And the case is Sussex Commons versus Rutgers University. And I think that the court, if you read the decision closely, the court never concludes that Rutgers Law Clinic wouldn't fall into this rigid definition of public agency. And in fact, Justice Albin's dissent talks about that. But the court said, we're going to avoid an absurd result. The legislature couldn't have meant that this law school clinic has all of its files open. So we're going to find it's exempt from
access. There's a lot of attorney-client privilege in the content of that decision.
Right. But the court didn't say it's a public agency and you can assert attorney-client privilege. It said it's not a public agency. And so what we're asking the court to do here is, and there's language in Lafayette Yard that talks about, you know, form over function. The prosecutors.
This is not Lafayette Yard either. I mean, I was looking for an analogy there, but it's not a close analogy.
I will tell you that I searched the nation high and low to try to find an organization like CPANJ where essentially there is no distinction really between CPANJ and the county prosecutor's office. It's as if they just say, we're in this room, all the prosecutors, and we're calling ourselves CPANJ. On paper, yes, they have a bank account, those sort of things. But in terms of any separation.
Respectfully, I think on paper really matters in this. And I think you could say in Very, you could have made the same argument in Very that this volunteer fire department is totally dominated by the professional firefighter organization that's there. And yet the court said no. Now, it may not make a difference ultimately whether the documents were available, but the court said no, because it is not an instrumentality of a political subdivision. It's an instrumentality of an instrumentality, and it's outside the definition. So I can't speak to what was going on in Sussex Commons. I was not on that case, but I think in a number of our cases over the years, we look very carefully at that definition. So I think
Very is different, though. I think Very is factually different because you don't have constitutional officers who are the sole members of the organization. And there's not that extra level. And it feels different in this. CPANJ feels much more like a public agency to me than the League of Municipalities, which really does function as a separate entity from the towns that they're representing.
And they are in.
So it's, to me, it's difficult, even though it's hard to articulate under the statute because of the unique nature of the county prosecutor, it's difficult to understand why the League of Municipalities would be subject to OPRA, but County Prosecutors Association isn't.
Are you telling us that when you look at the statute, you can't find, and I'm not saying this in any negative way, because I know if there's anybody who would be able to find this, it's you. You can't find a subsection of the statute in which CPANJ, I keep forgetting the name, CPANJ, would fit.
No, I think it's an instrumentality of the executive branch. And that's what I argued in the brief. And I also, I think, Justice Wehner, after you said this, like, isn't it telling that by having assistant prosecutors represent them in county prosecutors' offices enter appearances that it's almost a concession that they're a public agency and they're operating like a public agency. There's really, I think this is different than other cases where you would have a set of factors. One factor, not a dispositive factor, being was it created by a statute? It's dispositive. If it's created by a statute, dispositive. They're going to be subject to OPRA.
Can you focus on the language of the first clause that I think you were steering us to? Are you looking at the language instrumentality within or created by such department?
Yes, and I think that the County Prosecutors Association is an instrumentality of the executive branch of the state government.
But how do you, what's the department that created them or that they are within?
I think they're within just like the prosecutors are within the Attorney General Department. It's within the executive branch. The county prosecutors play this unique role where they're both, the legislature said, within the county government and then also within the executive branch.
For the Department of Law and Public Safety? If we're talking about principal departments, is that the department that the prosecutors are in?
I think so, yes. And I think that they serve as an instrumentality of that department. There's the sole purpose is just so that they can help formulate this policy in this way in which they're collaborating together.
Prosecutors are an instrumentality?
No, I think the prosecutors are within the department and the instrumentality is CPANJ.
What if the prosecutor, sorry, so the principal department you said is the Department of Law and Public Safety. Are the prosecutor's offices an office within the Department of Law and Public Safety and then CPANJ is an instrumentality of that office?
I don't see, it's hard to make the distinction because the elephant in the room is just the way in which CPANS operates and how there's really not a distinction between the county prosecutors themselves and CPANS. So whatever the county prosecutors are, and they're subject to OPRA, CPANS should be as well because there is no distinction. And Ms. Thompson said this about like...
So you would say that we should consider CPANS to be part of the Department of Law and Public Safety?
Or essentially one and the same as the county prosecutors. Because there really isn't a distinction based on all the facts.
Let's think about what that means. What you're saying is, A, the county prosecutors are within the Department of Law and Public Safety, which is, I don't believe is this court's ever viewed it that way. And B, that we should then loop in CPANJ as part of what is on this floor, the Office of the Attorney General and the Department of Law and Public Safety.
I don't know that it's part of the law and public safety. Whatever the what I'm saying is whatever the court deems the county prosecutor to be, whether it's an office of the executive branch or that there is no distinction between CPANJ and the county prosecutor. So you substitute county prosecutor in for whatever you put the county prosecutor.
Isn't that exactly what an instrumentality is? When you look at the cases that have found instrumentalities of political subdivisions, including Franklin Fire District Number 1 in the Franklin case, the case as to which OPRA applied, the instrumentality is something that is put together and created and used by the political subdivision.
I think that there's a slight difference because this instrumentality does suggest some separateness. And I don't think there's any separateness here. And I think that's why it's unlike the municipal clerks. That's why it's unlike the chiefs of police.
So if somebody's an AP and gets a job as an assistant prosecutor, they're working for CPANJ?
They are working for CPANJ. They entered an appearance in this and only backed out a week before.
I'm talking about being counsel of record. What I'm talking about is the employee of an assistant prosecutor is CPANJ?
Yes, and if you look there, the county prosecutors are doing CPANJ work because CPANJ work is the county prosecutor's work. There's no difference. So CPANJ in a name does not prosecute a case. The prosecutor does. But otherwise, all the work that CPANJ does is the same work as the county prosecutors. They develop policies. They do all those things. So that's what I'm saying, that there's no distinction. So wherever the court puts the county prosecutor into OPRA, you substitute CPANJ in the same place based on the facts. I don't think that any other organization is going to come to the court with the same the same facts, because no other organization is operating in this way where they're, it's just the prosecutors decided to have an association.
When was CPENT created and why? I mean, I know their, you know, official statement as to why they exist, but what year was it and why did they decide to incorporate as a private entity rather than just being, this is the email listserv of all 21 county prosecutors?
So the, my hunch is that Mr. Gamaccini can answer that question more precisely. The record here is very sparse. That's another issue I briefed in my brief is in these sort of cases, an Oprah case in general, and I know I've said it before, it's very difficult to get discovery. So the only information we have is just this bare amount of information that we were able to scour ourselves. But my recollection was it was in the 50s. I don't think it was some nefarious attempt to avoid a records law. But I don't think that would contingent, you know, that's the reason why you would need it. But I think
created by the Attorney General.
I don't think it's in the record, or I'm not familiar with it to know. But certainly the Attorney General exerts tremendous control over CPANG.
How?
Like, as I said, the Attorney General, Justice Solomon referred to this, like calls the meetings. The meetings are in the Attorney General.
How do you know that?
I don't speak as an authority on these.
I think that there's some information in the complaint about that. I think also the Attorney General, like I said, the Attorney General could order the prosecutors themselves to do something, which therefore is ordering CPANG to do it because there's no distinction. And to me, that's what makes this case different than any other case before this court.
If we agree that there is zero distinction between the 21 county prosecutors and CPANG, what's your argument?
If there's zero, my argument is there is zero distinction. So the CPANG is also a public agency that actually benefits CPANG more than making us go to the county prosecutors. Because if the court finds that CPANG isn't a public agency, that means all of the communications that they've had with the Attorney General...
Our role here is not to decide what benefits CPANG and what doesn't. We have one role, and that is one role in this case, and that is to figure out if the legislature, under the plain language of the statute, whether this CPANG is in or out.
Right, but I think the court does look at absurd results, and I would suggest it's an absurd result to find that CPANG isn't a public agency, given all the facts that we've given you around the extensive, the extensive and exclusive use of government resources that no other non-governmental agency would ever have. And given the fact that a consequence of the decision would mean that the communications that the Attorney General has had with CPANG to make policy would then be subject to public access.
Do you know how other associations like the chiefs of police, the wardens, the sheriff, et cetera, are funded?
Yes. Yeah, so I don't think funding alone is a dispositive factor. It is a factor. The court considered it in the League of Municipalities case that a certain percentage of the budget came from public funds. They also received some membership dues, conference registrations, and that sort of thing. I'm not going to concede that they aren't subject to OPRA. It just occurs to me that I wouldn't bring that case with knowing what I know. They seem to be a completely different creature. They're not conducting all of their business during business hours. They're not using county staff to staff their conventions. I encourage you to read my brief because we did provide that information, about how the county government will pay CPAN so that their attorneys can go and work the event. So they're acting like a public agency, and that's fine because they are one. And we just want the ruling saying, yes, you are a public agency. Yes, you have to comply with the records request and have some transparency.
I'd like to go back to the actual words of the statute for a minute. Or other instrumentality within or created by such department is a general phrase.
Mm-hmm.
That general phrase follows specific words. In a matter of statutory interpretation, the general has to be like the specific. So the specific words are either a principal department in the executive branch or division, board, bureau, or office. The use of the county, wherever we fit the county prosecutors, should be where we fit CPANG. Do the county prosecutors fit in principal departments?
I think they probably more likely fit in office.
Okay, so why do you say that?
Well, I believe, but that the principal departments might be like law and public safety or Department of Environment. But I think that
in our constitution, isn't there a limit on the number of principal departments that there can be?
That's my recollection. I think it was 26 or something, but there is a limit. But I think that
if they're principal departments,
I think that if it's
21.
An office, the any instrumentality within or created by that office would make it fall within the definition. I think that there is a way we briefed it to get it to fall within the precise hyper technical definition, but I think that to do that would to insist on having to do that, and I understand the desire to do that. The court doesn't want to create law, but to insist on having to do that ignores case law like Sussex Commons, and it ignores the very precise factual circumstances here, where there's really not a distinction between the two.
To say that we're insisting on trying to figure out if CPANS is in or out of the definition. How many cases where we have said that our job is not to decide if the legislature's policy is good, bad, or indifferent? Our job is to look at the legislative intent, and the best indicator of legislative intent is legislative language. That's one of the fundamental purposses of our court.
I do. I understand that, and that is absolutely...
It's not a hobby.
I respect your job, and that it's difficult, and no, it's absolutely the court's role. But what I'm suggesting is the court also sometimes looks at absurd results. So just like finding that the Rutgers Law Clinic, the legislature couldn't have meant that they would be subject to OPRA, I don't think that the legislature also meant that counties can't form these organizations and use all their resources, and towns can't, but somehow a constitutional officer can. I think that wasn't the intention of the legislature to be able to allow a government employee, a special constitutional officer, to have an organization that they fully fund and treat as if it's their own actual government office. They're using all the resources of their office to do the work of that organization. And I don't think that was the legislature's intent.
The doctrine of absurd results that the court resorts to from time to time typically deals with a reading of a statute that might suggest the legislature has done something that it clearly couldn't have meant to because it was absurd. Are there cases where that works in the opposite, where the premise is it's absurd that the legislature didn't say something that we think they should have said?
Off the top of my head, I can't think of one. But I don't know why it wouldn't apply, because I think when you look, and I put this in my brief too, when you look at how the legislature went from both the definition of government record in OPRA versus the right to know law, as well as the definition of public agency from the right to know law, it's clear. And actually, if you look at the legislative history, there's a public hearing transcript that this court cited to before, that it's clear that they were trying to expand the definition of public agency to include agencies other than traditional government agencies. And the reason why I say that is because there's discussion in that public transcript about the Lafayette Yard organization, which this court then later found was subject to OPRA. And so by expanding the definition of public agency significantly in OPRA, I think there was an attempt to ensure that all these organizations, that public officials couldn't create organizations to avoid OPRA. And so that they used all this language about instrumentalities and offices and independent authorities. And for whatever reason, they did the language, although I think the first provision captures it because it's an instrumentality of an office, for whatever reason, it's not as clear as that we would like. But I don't think that the legislature would intended that an office
But Lafayette Yard was a fit. It was an instrumentality of a political subdivision.
Well, it was a fit because the court found that, but the entity argued that they weren't created by statutes or ordinances, that it was a group of spirited citizens came together, but the court still said it fit because the mayor and the council controlled the membership because they were doing a public business.
In the end, it fit. The court, notwithstanding the arguments that were made by Lafayette Yard Community Development, Lafayette Yard was found to be an instrumentality or agency created by a political subdivision. And when we go to the statute, and that's in.
Yes, it fits because of the court's interpretation, but it fits. We're arguing it fits here, too.
But are you? I'm sorry. Please go ahead.
Go ahead.
No, please.
And that was all private citizens.
Yes, but ultimately, that's the reference. I have to read the same case as you. I wasn't involved in it. That's the references that they argued that this was spirited and private citizens, and it's a private organization. And the court said, well, that would elevate form over substance, because in reality, what's happening is that the mayor and the city council control it. And so that's what we're asking the court to do here. Yes, there's a piece of paper that's filed that technically makes CPANG a nonprofit association. But in reality, if you look at all the facts, the county prosecutors are running the organization and doing all of its business through their offices. And so if worst case scenario means that we have to file a request with all the county one prosecutors, that would make life much more difficult in the state, less transparent. But it's important that we can still get the records that way. And so I think that we think it fits. I think Justice Fascelli, you helped us get there. I don't think it's through the political subdivision, but I do think that it's the membership is completely controlled. They're using government, completely controlled by the governor, the attorney general.
Let's focus on one other aspect of the statute. The words within or created by principal department, division, board, bureau, office, commission, or other instrumentality within or created by such department. Within, is CPANG within the Department of Law and Public Safety?
Well, I think it's within or created by the office. I understand it says by such department, but I don't think that the legislature would have intended that.
It doesn't say within or created by an office. It says within or created by such department. That's important. We've got to look at the actual language of the statute. So we have two things here. Or is in the middle of them, so either one has to be true. It has to be within the Department of Law and Public Safety, which you've identified as the principal department, or it's got to be created by the Department of Law and Public Safety. Is it either?
And I would go back to the absurd results, that I don't think that the legislature intended to say the principal departments, any instrumentality that they create is subject to OPRA. But if any division or board or bureau creates an instrumentality and uses the full scope of their offices to conduct the private business of this organization, that organization is not subject to OPRA. The language in OPRA could be so much more precise in so many more ways, which is why we've been here so many times. But I don't think that the legislature intended that these other entities, if you will, government entities, could just circumvent OPRA by creating an instrumentality using their office to do it. Here, there's just really no daylight between CPANG and the county prosecutor's office. They're one and the same, and everything in their case shows that they're one and the same.
Thank you, Counselor.
Thank you.
Mr. Vermichian.
Thank you. Hey, please, the court. It's an honor to be able to appear for you today and represent CPANG. I'll do my best to answer many of the questions the panel had, but I would like to respectfully point out, with the efforts of my esteemed colleagues, the fact that this court is still grappling and basically having to perform legal gymnastics to try to arrive at defining CPANG as a public agency under the OPRA statute, the already deliberately drafted and broad OPRA statute, I would submit should tell the court everything it needs to know with respect to what in affirming this decision from below. As has been pointed out by several members on the court, nothing in the OPRA statute's plain language says anything, nor the past precedents by this court, that OPRA applies to a volunteer nonprofit organization that happens to be made up of people who hold public jobs, public actors. I'm going to outline the reasons why I think CPANG is a far cry from this deliberately broad definition of OPRA. In that statute, what constitutes public agency is clear. It is basically It applies only to instrumentalities within or created by one of the covered entities, as pointed out by Justice Patterson. And in this case, CPANJ is an entity, a private entity, that's outside that definition. It's not a direct instrumentality of any of the entities, and therefore not subject to OPRA. It's too attenuated because, as this court's past precedent noted, no direct connection exists. And that's the same finding that the appellate division below made and has been previously held by this court. The specific criteria in the OPRA statute in defining a public agency doesn't consider an entity's formation, structure, or function. As I said, the focus is rather on the direct connection or nexus to an entity of a government or a political subdivision. Setting all that aside, recognizing that that doesn't exist for CPANJ, even if you do consider CPANJ's formation, structure, and purpose, it reaffirms the conclusion that CPANJ is a private entity, not a public agency subject to OPRA. Justice Patterson pointed out, as did several members of the court, that Vary is the most recent, one of the more recent decisions that this court has ruled on. There's literally very little daylight between Vary and the factual circumstances at bar here. In Vary, as this point pointed out, the volunteer fire department was considered an instrumentality of an instrumentality of a political subdivision. And that's at best what you have here with CPANJ. Now, there's been some discussion about funding and use of government resources. I think it's important to note that in Vary, that fire volunteer fire district was contracted by the fire district to perform fire prevention services, essentially performing the definition of a traditional government function. They got paid to perform that service. Their house that they kept the fire trucks and all the equipment in was paid for by the municipality, by the fire district. Their training, everything else, their equipment was paid for. We don't have any of that here. CPANJ doesn't have any such funding or source. And I'll get to the resources argument in a moment, but if the volunteer fire district was considered outside of the definition of OPRA, CPANJ is even more attenuated than in that circumstance. I want to address what I would characterize as a false dichotomy that my colleagues ask this court to consider. And they try to corner the CPANJ decision into a binary choice of it's either a public agency or everyone that participates in CPANJ is committing ethical violations. And I would ask the court not to indulge and take that bait. There is nothing unethical about using government resources for professional growth and volunteering on behalf of a nonprofit or charitable organization. In fact, it is encouraged. As the court is aware, the prosecutor's code of ethics has a number of limitations on what prosecutors can and cannot do. And one of the express things that prosecutors can perform is participate in volunteer charitable organizations, as long as there's no substantial conflict in discharging your official duties and there's no issues as to impartiality. So public actors are permitted to use government resources in this fashion. It's good for professional growth, for networking. And much of it is essentially incidental work as it is. But regardless of the use of resources or otherwise, this court has already held that the question of whether an entity is subject to OPRA does not turn on public use of funds. And that was in the Vary case. The appellate division in this case, I would submit, got it right. This entity, the CPANJ, is at best an instrumentality of offices. And an instrumentality of an instrumentality is not borne out in reading the unambiguous and clear language of the OPRA statute. This court, as it's been pointed out, cannot presume to write language into a statute. That is the purview and province of the legislature. And certainly not on a concept that the definition is somehow elastic. Now, I want to talk a little bit about CPANJ itself, because there's been a lot of discussion and candidly some questions about it. And many of those statements have been somewhat conclusory and selective. And the fact that many of those questions are out there, I would briefly point out that this is a review of a motion to dismiss. It essentially proves the point that there wasn't enough evidence sufficient to proceed past the motion to dismiss stage, even in the light most favorable to the plaintiff. But be that as it may, I realize what we're reviewing today, which is whether CPANJ falls in the definition of OPRA, of a public agency. Now, it's important to note that it's a nonprofit volunteer organization that was created in 1982, and it consists of 21 volunteers who happened to be public officials. CPANG doesn't compensate any of its members. It doesn't have any employees or staff. It doesn't have an office or a physical location, and it organizes a professional organization under 501C. Importantly, CPANG's membership is volunteer, not mandatory. It's not established by the Attorney General or the governor. It's up to the individual member who happens to be a public actor. He or she can decide if they want to affiliate, if they don't. When they take an oath to become a prosecutor, they don't take a separate oath or a combined oath that says, oh, by the way, you're joining CPANG. And the same can be said for all of the other participation on volunteer bases that prosecutors do, which are innumerable, the 200 Club.
Has any county prosecutor declined to join CPANG from its inception?
I don't know the answer to that, Your Honor, but I don't believe the case. I think all of them have joined, but it is discretionary.
You told us you were going to touch on resources. Where does CPANG's, where do its resources come from, generally speaking?
It comes from, the record is somewhat devoid of that in the lower courts, which is obviously part of our argument that they haven't met their burden to proceed. But the funding comes from county resources.
All government resources, no private sources.
Yes, sir.
And I think Ms. Thompson mentioned that all the members are dues-paying members, and all of those dues are paid for by what entity?
It comes from each government agency, government prosecutor's office.
So each county prosecutor's office pays for each county prosecutor to be a member of CPANG.
And then those funds are used, its stated purpose and goals in the bylaw is to maintain cooperation amongst OAG, DCJ, and the 21 county prosecutors, but importantly, relative to developing educational programs so as to promote the orderly administration of criminal justice. So it's why largely an education.
Why are prosecutors subject to OPRA? What is the section in which an individual prosecutor's office falls?
Your Honor, I was grappling with that as you were asking those questions. I would think, and I'll be happy to provide supplemental briefing if the court wishes, but I would think that it fits mostly under the political subdivision, an office of a political subdivision, which is a county, the political subdivision being a county, considering they're all called.
Isn't the only thing that it says about it in the Constitution that it's appointed by the governor with the advice and consent of the Senate for a 5-year term, and then there's a bunch of statutes explaining how the Attorney General would supervise it? So why would it be an office of a county if in the Constitution it's described as, a connection to the governor?
It's a fair question, and this is why I'm willing to provide supplemental briefing if necessary, because I can see that argument as well. But that said, it's broken out in the Constitution. There's a provision for the Attorney General, but there's also provisions for each county shall have a prosecutor, as you point out. I think it's also important CPANG doesn't, there's been arguments that they're one and the same from the prosecutors. And
I'm sorry, can we step back to that?
Of course.
Because to me, that's a really important point, because once we can identify what the county prosecutor is and why, despite, I'm sure there are many county prosecutors who would have loved to have made an argument about not being a public agency, but it's never been made in the history of litigation, as far as we can tell. So you think most likely it is an office of a political subdivision in sort of the second part of the statute?
Yeah, Your Honor, since it wasn't really covered on the briefing below, that would be my position, but I would be happy to. Now, I also note that there is a criminal investigatory exemption that applies to records at a county prosecutor's office. So it would seem to make sense that it would be considered some kind of public agency.
That's more evidence that the legislature intended county prosecutors
yes,
to
ma'am.
Be in.
But I think it's important with the argument about CPANG being one and the same as county prosecutors. It's important that CPANG doesn't have any investigatory or prosecutorial powers. They can't conduct investigations or arrest anyone. They can't issue subpoenas. They can't do custodial interviews, and they can't perform any of the sworn functions that are reserved for a county prosecutor under New Jersey Statute 2A158 TAC 5. They cannot.
When you say they can't, do you mean they don't, or they are prohibited by statute to decide what CPANG does, aside from the 21 county prosecutors who come together and sit in a room and then say, We are now CPANJ.
Well, it's the statute. I mean, their powers.
Which statute?
If you take 158.5, that's what gives a county prosecutor their authority. But it doesn't say when they volunteer for an organization, those powers somehow magically carry over. I mean, a county prosecutor might volunteer to be like on a little league board in their municipal town. It doesn't mean that they also hold those powers to be able to carry out those functions.
Why is CPANJ representing the county prosecutor? Sorry, why are county prosecutors representing CPANJ in court?
On amicus?
I understand you are not a county prosecutor.
Yeah, yeah.
But in previous cases, I think it was 36 was the number thrown around. Why are county prosecutors representing CPANJ in court if you're suggesting that CPANJ is the same as someone coaching Little League in their private capacity?
Well, because, I mean, with amicus, for example, the friend of the court concept, it welcomes opinions from potentially anyone that might have a stake, an arguable point that might be valued
to
the court.
But in this case, the initial attorney of record was an AP from Mercer County assigned to this case by the Mercer County prosecutor.
Yes, Your Honor.
A member of CPANJ. So it wasn't a friend of the court in the friend of the court context. It was in the context of representing a private entity in court in a matter that had nothing to do with the usual duties of an assistant prosecutor in the prosecution and investigation of criminal matters in the state.
Yes, but I would say they're just like anyone volunteering to support on an endeavor that the AP wasn't under any particular orders.
Prosecutors aren't allowed to do that, though. There's a specific statute that says they can only represent the state of New Jersey in court. So they could not represent their friend in a divorce matter. They could not represent their friend in a child custody matter. They could not represent their child's Little League team in a civil matter. So.
But I do, the prosecutor's code of ethics says that they can participate in volunteer or charitable organizations. This is what they're doing here.
Without practicing law. So you're saying filing a brief in court and having your signature at the bottom is the same as coaching Little League and it's not the same as practicing law?
No. Of course, I appreciate your Honor's point about practicing law. I mean, but it's for the benefit of the court when it's considering whatever legal issue is before it. I mean,
if the prosecutor wanted one of the assistant prosecutors to represent the ACLU, when the ACLU was appearing before the court as a friend of the court, sometimes the ACLU will be represented by a private law firm. The prosecutor in this case says, I want you, assistant prosecutor, I'm assigning you to represent the ACLU in court in this friend of the court. The ACLU is entering as an amicus. You're representing the ACLU as a friend of the court. That would be permitted?
I don't think so. I don't know that to be the case, Your Honor. I mean, obviously, there's an interest with performing a prosecutorial function. A lot of the legal issues that CPANJ lends support to from a potential general policy perspective is designed for the court to have the most informed opinion. Naturally, you're going to get your subject matter experts from people that work in a county prosecutor's office. So I can't imagine that scenario where they'd be directed to volunteer for an ACLU issue.
Other than the argument that the position of the ACLU and the position of County Prosecutors Association in any given case would be at direct odds. Other than that, which I think is what you're saying, is there anything in the county prosecutor's laws, the Constitution, anything that would prevent CPANJ from deciding to ask its prosecutors if one of them would represent an interest that was in common with the ACLU? Is there anything preventing them? CPANJ taking a position that was consistent with the ACLU's position in any given.
I don't think so, Your Honor. I don't see anything to that end, no.
And you mentioned the fact that prosecutors investigating prosecute cases, I think we already delved in this a little bit, but CPANJ does not prosecute and investigate. Does CPANJ make any binding decrees, edicts, issue any kind of guidelines, but orders any kind of conduct by the individual prosecutors? Does it have the authority to compel prosecutors to do anything?
No, they're just essentially, it's sharing of thoughts. It's a gathering of thought. The attorney general can do that by directive or guideline. Of course, the legislature can pass laws that are binding on, criminal laws that are binding. Of course, this court can inform in that regard, but this CPANJ doesn't have that ability or authority.
Counsel, is there anyone in the organization who is either not a lawyer or not a prosecutor?
No, sir.
Does it perform government functions?
Well, that's my point. The government function test is the creation test is what dictates. But even looking at the government function test, that's precisely my argument, is they're not doing traditional law enforcement activities. As I mentioned in their bylaws, their purpose is to educate. Everything is relative to education. And that's okay to exist. When the county prosecutors leave and decide to join this volunteer organization, wherever they might meet at various locations, they don't magically transform their sworn authority they hold individually to a separate volunteer organization. It just doesn't work like that.
The reason why I asked the question is I think what they say is it promotes the orderly administration of justice, formulates criminal justice policy, and operates in service to the prosecutor's law enforcement power. That's, I think, what they say to support the proposition that CPA performs a government function that matters when we answer the question of whether it's a public agency.
I think CPANG doesn't perform any government function, which is easily distinguishable with cases like League of Municipalities. And for example, the Attorney General, there's no opinion that they're a public agency like you had in League of Municipalities or the Fire District case. They're easily distinguished.
You're saying the Attorney General is not a public agency?
I'm sorry?
Did you just say the Attorney General is not a public agency?
No. I said the Attorney General and some of the precedent this court has issued, the Attorney General's issued opinions saying this is a public agency. For example, League of Municipality, they said that is a public agency. It's one of the many facts that are easily distinguishable in reviewing CPANG to the precedential cases cited by all the parties in this case. Another one is the Franklin Fire District case. In that case, the Attorney General issued an opinion where he saying it's a public agency. In ASPCA, they conceded they were a public agency. And they, by the way, performed a traditional law enforcement function, even though it was an appellate division case. I mean, they're out there enforcing animal cruelty laws. It's easy to distinguish from the case bar.
How do you distinguish Sussex Commons? I'm sorry, Chief.
Thank you, Your Honor. Sussex Commons, obviously, is a situation where the legal clinic was found not to be part of the public agency, which was the school. In that case, I think it's important that the court held that there was no evidence that the legislature intended to apply OPRA to clinics like that. And they cited to the plain language. If it's ambiguous, you could look extrinsically. But in this case, I would submit it's unambiguous. I also think it's important that they noted that broader application beyond a statutory mandate could open the door to additional vexatious OPRA requests in the future, which is obviously a big concern of municipalities and other public agencies.
Yeah, I'm sorry, Jim. Go.
Does CPANG develop public policy issues with respect to criminal justice matters?
As CPANG develop, I'm sorry, Your Honor.
Does CPANG issue or develop policy statements on criminal justice issues?
No, Your Honor. We just provide opinions to the Attorney General, and then he or she would issue that. I'm aware that in the pleadings, I guess there was a matter back in 1985, and there might have been others cited in the appellate division where there was joint efforts, but not to my knowledge.
CPANG doesn't come together and recommend policy direction?
Oh, I'm so sorry. I thought you meant for purposes of the state, like being somehow binding on the state. No, of course. I mean, it's a sharing of thoughts. So among other things, they consider impacts on potential bills that might be relating to criminal justice that might be pending in the legislature.
So when all the county prosecutors are meeting to discuss that, for example, let's say, mm-hmm. are we all going to take a policy on this, a stance on this bill? How do they decide if they're the county prosecutors or CPANG? There are all 21 prosecutors sitting in a room. Do they put on one hat that says now we're all CPANG and then another hat that says now we're all the county prosecutors? They're making the same decision.
I mean, they're individuals. They're participating in a volunteer organization. But in terms of CPANG, I mean, they have their own letterhead. Correspondence is issued in that regard on CPANG letterhead. I mean,
it just includes all their names, right? Or, you know, the officers, but the officers are still the county prosecutors.
Yes, yes, ma'am. I don't know whose names it includes, but it's CPANG. It doesn't say.
What's the difference if all 21 county prosecutors agree on a particular issue?
All 21 county prosecutors, I'm sorry?
All 21 get together in a room and they decide, we vehemently oppose this bill. And we are in lockstep together on that. Is there a difference between the 21 county prosecutors taking a position and CPENG taking a position in a case such as that?
I would think so, Your Honor, because they're just individuals with their, they're acting in an independent capacity for this volunteer organization that is CPANG. They don't have any binding authority.
They're acting in an independent capacity when they're saying the county prosecutor's offices object to this bill because it would make our lives as county prosecutors harder. I understand that you act as you're in an independent capacity when you coach your child's Little League team, but if your job is a county prosecutor and you're explaining why the legislature should not pass this bill because it will harm your ability to enforce the state's criminal laws, that is not you acting in your individual capacity. That is you acting as a county prosecutor.
I respectfully disagree. It's the County Prosecutor Association of New Jersey that's coming up with that opinion, the volunteer 501c organization.
For the benefit of the individual counties, right? For the benefit of each county, they're bringing that back to.
Could it benefit the counties? Of course, but it's also for the general educational purposes that are set forth in the bylaws for the overall benefit to the criminal justice policy across the state.
If the Prosecutors Association takes a position as an association, they've met, they've discussed it, they've debated it. Vast majority agree one way. Is there anything stopping a county prosecutor from saying, no, I'm not doing that? We're showing up in front of a legislative committee and saying, no, I don't agree with that. Is there anything stopping any individual prosecutor from doing that?
Yes, Your Honor. I mean, just like with anything, things go to votes. And if you can decide to vote for or against something, if you don't want to participate in a position that you might be taking.
I'm talking about the Prosecutor Association takes a position. They're now going to testify in front of a legislative committee or espouse a policy as a group. Send a letter to the AG, say, listen, this is what a majority of us think. Is there anything stopping one county prosecutor, Middlesex, Camden, Bergen, from saying, I don't agree with that. I'm going to that legislative committee. I'm saying, I don't agree with that. Can he still do that?
Yes, of course.
Can he still say, I understand what you're saying we should do. I don't agree with it. Unless the AG gives me a directive, I'm not doing it.
That's right, because these are just opinions. This is just recommendations. So the answer to your question, Your Honor, is yes.
But statutorily, CPANG has a seat at the table in certain state-run organizations, right? Like the Department of Law and Public Safety's Police Training Commission. Is that correct?
Yes, sir.
And also the Parole Advisory Board. Right?
Yes, that's correct, Your Honor.
So separately, they're statutorily brought into those meetings.
Yes, amongst a number of other public and private actors. You're right. There's
other private actors.
I wouldn't know off the top of my head, but I'm aware that there's on those committees. It's a mix of public and private officials just for in terms of representation, like on the Criminal Practice Committee, for example, like. PTC, I think perhaps Noble maybe have membership. But I am just going off my best memory, Your Honor, so I don't want to mislead you at all. So
I just have one quick question for clarification. I understand as to vary that the volunteer fire department was an instrumentality of a political subdivision, but you said at best CPANG is an instrumentality of offices. Can you just clarify for me what you meant by that?
Well, the appellate division kind of concluded that a county prosecutor or a CPANG might fit one way or another, but either way, they landed on the fact that it was an instrumentality. If, as part of this court's discussion, there was discussion on whether they're part of a principal department of the executive branch, a county prosecutor's office, or is it a political subdivision, which in this case would be a county, I feel like, Your Honor, it doesn't matter either way because it's still... Three degrees of Kevin Bacon. It's like instrumentality of a political subdivision or of an office of a state agency. It's important to note, I think, also that this was formed in CPANJ was formed in 1982. The Open Public Records Act came out in 2002. It's not as if the legislature didn't know that CPANJ was out there. I mean, and, you know, if they intended to write volunteer organizations that happen to be made up of public officials into the law, the intentionally broad law, they would have done it. And
they could do it next week.
Yes, Your Honor. That's exactly right. And that's kind of my argument with due respect to this court's authority is its past precedent is when a statute is unambiguous, you look no further. And if the statute is ambiguous, you could look at under things like purpose, form, structure. I think CPANG is a private entity, not subject to OPRA on both fronts.
CPANG issues a memo summarizing their position on legislation or some other policy issue to all of the 21 members, and the members keep it on file or give it to fellow assistants in the office, subject to OPRA?
If they're held at a county prosecutor's office, is that? Well, I mean, it would have to be, there had to be determination that that was undertaken in the official course of their duties. And I think the argument, similar to the common law argument at the lower court, would be that when you're participating in these in this volunteer organization that is CPANG, those records might not be in the ordinary course of performing your official duties and responsibilities.
So then I, again, just come back to this statutory prohibition that forbids assistant prosecutors from providing any outside legal services. So how do we get around that here again?
Your Honor, I can't tell you that necessarily get around it. I mean, I think the intent is to volunteer in support of a charitable or educational organization. But I also would say we're not here on an ethics complaint issue. I mean, that, you know, we're framing this from the beginning. This is a motion to dismiss for failing to properly state a claim with all favorable inferences to the plaintiff. They put up a bunch of some baseless and conclusory allegations, and it didn't cut the mustard. So I would just encourage the court to affirm the lower court's position. I know that doesn't answer the question as directly as possible, but I don't necessarily know anything particularly gets around it. I don't know anything. I'm not confident that anything prohibits it either, because as I said, the Prosecutor's Code of Ethics actually expressly permits participation in volunteer agencies such as this.
Come back to the definition of government record with respect to the county prosecutor's office itself. They don't have to make a document, but if they receive a document in the course of their duties and keep it on file, that's subject to OPRA. It's your position that when they're receiving a memo with respect to a criminal justice policy that they endorse, they're doing that with a CPANG hat on and not the county prosecutor's hat on, and that's why it's not subject to OPRA?
If they receive it at a county prosecutor's office, it would be a difficult argument to make.
They got it in their own office, the office of the county prosecutor, because we know they have no physical space. That's a county prosecutor's association office.
Yes, Your Honor.
County prosecutor sitting at his or her desk gets it, files it, keeps it, received, not subject to OPRA?
No, I can't imagine an argument around that I could offer here. I would only counter with the fact that county prosecutors, I'm sure, might maintain different records from different areas in their life at their physical office. And it doesn't necessarily, it could come from various different walks of their life outside of being the county prosecutor. It doesn't mean that those records are automatically converted to government records.
No, but isn't this quite different than getting the minutes of the Little League meeting?
It is, Your Honor. Admittedly, it is. But I would only just respectfully tell the court that when somebody who's got a public job, who's a public actor, takes that position, they don't check their personal and private rights at the door. I mean, they're still, like any other private citizen, they're allowed to participate in volunteer organizations or charitable organizations. And
this is an organization, the second they're no longer county prosecutor.
I'm sorry, Your Honor.
This is an organization that they are out of the second they are no longer county prosecutor.
Yes, it is. It is one of those.
Starts and ends with their term as county prosecutor.
It does, but they maintain the independence and discretion to decide if he or she wants to participate. It's not directed by any government agency. It's not run by any government agency. There's no public employees like in League of Municipalities that are getting a salary and eligible for PERS. It's wholly distinguishable from this court's earlier decisions.
When the Attorney General sits with a group of 21 county prosecutors on a monthly or bi-monthly basis, is the general meeting with the County Prosecutors Association or with 21 county prosecutors?
Those meetings, I know the court had asked that earlier, those meetings are called by the County Prosecutors Association. And for purposes of convenience, members of the Attorney General staff will often join, but they'll come and then they'll go, and then we'll hold our meeting in this building just two floors below. I used to hold our meetings two floors below. It is a CPANG meeting. It is not called by the Attorney General. And I think that's an important distinguishing fact. The fact that it happens here in Trenton, it's in the central part of the state, and it seems to be a convenient forum.
I ask this to follow up on the notion that they're one and the same and that it's seamless. If CPANG says to the Attorney General, we'd like to have a meeting next week, that's a CPANG meeting. But if the Attorney General sends an email and says, I'd like to meet with the 21 county prosecutors, that's not?
No, and that's happened on occasion when the Attorney General has issued directives or guidelines, whether it's telephonic, the Attorney General, he or she might typically decide to hold those meetings at a convenient time and place when he knows everyone will be assembled. But it is not a meeting called by the Attorney General. There's been several instances where...
But you're saying it always happens at a CPANG meeting?
No, not only. I mean, oftentimes the Attorney General will ask the prosecutors in their county prosecutor positions to get on the phone to discuss a matter. That's happened on a number of occasions.
On a substantive level?
Yes, sir.
How are these meetings different from the perspective of the Attorney General, the county prosecutors, and CPANG? Does it turn on who initiates them?
I think so, because, I mean, the CPANJ is calling these meetings for purposes of sharing of ideas, and they're discussing more than just, you know, potential legislation that might affect their offices.
But if the Attorney General calls the meeting and there's a sharing of ideas, that's not a CPANJ meeting?
Oftentimes when the Attorney General would call the meetings, it was for a directed purpose, an individual purpose about, hey, I'm going to issue this guideline and I'd like your input, or we have this particular matter that's ongoing and this is how I would like to address it. It's usually for a more pointed and individual reason, not just for purposes. CPANG meetings are discussed in everything from, you know, scholarship programs to training to educational opportunities.
Do you agree with Ms. Griffin that in instances when CPANG is communicating with the AG's office and providing information or their position with regard to policy initiatives or legislation, that's all information that is public information that can be obtained from the Attorney General's office, because that's communication with a private entity and not a communication that would be privileged between the AG's office and an individual prosecutor's office?
Well, that would obviously be if an OPR request was sent to the Attorney General's office, they're a public agency, they'd have to sort that out, whether an exemption would apply on their own. But if the OPR recipient is a private organization like CPANG, they're just not a public agency under the statute. So that's obviously our point, our argument today.
Is it usually the case that if a private entity is communicating with a public entity, that information would be able to be obtained from the public entity through OPRA?
Yes, Your Honor, I would think so, subject to any exemptions that the public agency sought to apply.
But if CPANG is a private entity, as you're arguing, CPANG is a private entity, not operating as a public entity, there likely wouldn't be an exemption to not allow that information to be obtained via OPRA. And the excuse couldn't be, well, this was a communication between the 21 county prosecutors, because the communication was between the organization and not the county prosecutor.
Yes, Your Honor, it would be very difficult to assert like a criminal investigatory exemption when you're acting as a private entity without those law enforcement functions. So yes.
And if the Attorney General's office is seeking to convene the meeting, does it just matter whether they type in the email address CPANJ and it goes to all 21 county prosecutors' emails individually, or whether they individually type in all 21 county prosecutors' email address? How do they say, you know, we would like to meet with the 21 county prosecutor's office, but we'd like to call it not a CPANG meeting? We don't want CPANG to have anything to do with this.
I don't know the answer to that, Your Honor. I mean, when the Attorney General's office, and this is obviously outside the record, but in my personal former experience, when they wanted to get together with the prosecutors, they send an email and say, I need to have a conference call, or we need to meet here on this date and time. They didn't make a distinction between CPANG, but again, CPANG is something that the organization puts together and holds meetings in various locations throughout the state, but candidly, oftentimes in Trenton, which is in the middle, a convenient forum for everyone.
So basically, it's never a CPANG meeting unless CPANG says that it's a CPANG meeting. But if the Attorney General is reaching out to schedule the meeting, then it's automatically not a CPANG meeting. I'm just having trouble. I mean, we keep saying CPANG is not, or you are advocating that CPANG is not the same as the county prosecutor's office. But then it seems like your answer to all these questions is, is the same. The 21 county prosecutor's office, when you can refer to all 21 of them together as the county prosecutors, or can you can refer to all 21 of them together as CPANJ?
Each of those prosecutors that make up CPANJ, they don't have any authority once they leave their jurisdictional borders. Like, they can't perform functions like an investigation or prosecution type functions when they get together at CPANJ meetings. They just, it's not the, and the attorney general, him or herself, they can't.
Suggesting that they're engaged in some sort of like ultra vires activity that they're not authorized to do? It doesn't seem like you'd want to be arguing that.
Say it one more time, Your Honor, please.
If you're saying they don't have any authority to do what they're doing in a CPANJ meeting, then isn't that a problem for them that they're engaging in this ultra vires activity that they don't have any statutory authority to perform? It's not the same as coaching Little League. CPANJ is not the same as coaching your child's Little League game.
I bring that up because it's proof positive they're not performing a government function. It's a governmental function, which the opposition makes a big deal over. It's not.
But they're very much performing a legal function, right? There's no question about it that they're engaged in the practice of law to some degree, in as much as they're representing a party before a court in many of those circumstances. So in response to Justice Wiener-Apter's question, she's asking about how do we distinguish when you're saying they leave the prosecutor's office behind when they go to the CPANJ meetings? How do they do that?
They're talking about matters other than official business. I mean, they're talking about things that might very well relate to criminal justice reform, of course, but also, like I said, scholarship opportunities, educational matters, training, different topics.
Let's stay with that in terms of OPRA on the Attorney General's office. If Mothers Against Drunk Driving takes a position on a criminal justice matter, writes a letter to the Attorney General, is that subject to OPRA?
To the Attorney General, I think he's a public official at a public agency, so absent any exemption, which I couldn't think of one that applied, I would think yes, Your Honor.
It wouldn't be deliberative or consultative. It's a letter from a private entity going to the Attorney General, right?
Yes, sir.
So if CPANJ is a private agency and writes a very similar letter on the same topic, is that subject to OPRA? To the Attorney General?
Not if the request is directed to the public agency that is the Office of the Attorney General. But if that same OPRA request is sent to a private entity like CPANJ, they're not a public agency under the OPRA statute. So
if you're a private entity, like a myriad of other entities, as counsel had argued earlier, are your memos that go to the Attorney General subject to OPRA?
When they arrive at the Attorney General's office, I think they'd be subject to OPRA with no exemption that I can think of, Your Honor. The last thing that I'll bring up, Your Honor, I would consider the potential chilling effect for public actors who might wish to participate in volunteer activities. How many other organizations with public actors as members might be swept up in the requested overly broad definition and characterization under OPRA? We know of at least two that have joined here, the municipal chiefs, the state chiefs association, the municipal clerks association, but there are plenty of others. And the implications of broadening this already broad statute without legislation, I can imagine would affect easily thousands of employees. The last thing I'll say is if the court reviews the appellate decisions, the appellate division's decision, it takes you back to the clear and unambiguous language, which is, doesn't cover instrumentality of a political subdivision or a sub-agency of an executive branch. And for these reasons, I would respectfully request on behalf of my client that the court affirm the lower court's decision. Unless there's any further questions, I appreciate it. Thank you.
Thank you. Mr. Pearl.
Good afternoon, Chief Justice and Associate Justices. May it please the court. The Municipal Clerks Association is concerned that a decision from this court holding that a private, non-governmental entity that's neither within nor created by a public agency is subject to OPR and the common law right of access could have substantial unintended consequences for hundreds of voluntary and service organizations throughout the state that touch or concern or interact with governmental entities. We come today to ask this court to employ a judicial scalpel to narrowly tailor its decision. And to be clear, while we take a position on the merits of this action, no position on the merits of this action, we must express our strong concern. The expansive language employed by the plaintiff and the courts below, especially in their petition for certiorari. This is particularly so where the broad language deviates from settled law and potentially sweeps up numerous professional, social, educational, and advocacy organizations who engage in activities that provide service to or assist agencies, instrumentalities, and subdivisions whom the legislature intended to apply OPR. To that point, the Municipal Clerks Association, a 501c3 nonprofit, is concerned by any holding the court could issue that for the first time in the state's jurisprudential history could find that an entity is not within or created by a public entity or an instrumentality or subdivision thereof could be held to OPR and the common law requirements. This has the potential to chill and deter public participation in our representative democracy. I appreciate the acknowledgement today that the clerks are different than the County Prosecutors Association by counsel. The matter before the court, while the subject of considerable legal analysis, lengthy briefing, and lengthy debate today, is a simple issue of statutory construction. This is not a government function test, and I would point to the words of Justice Leavecki in the majority opinion, Verrie v. Franklin Fire District Number 1. To the extent our prior decisions have discussed creation or governmental function test when demarcating the boundaries of what qualified as a public agency, such tests are useful only in as much as they effectuate application of the statutory language. This case calls for a straightforward exercise of statutory interpretation to discern and implement the legislature's intent, and each word is given its ordinary and plain and common significance, as this court has held previously. The parties, including the municipal clerks, have briefed the Open Public Records Act extensively, and the key element here is the literal prescription the entity must be within or created by a public agency. We come before this court to share our recent experience, a request who sought to impose OPR records retention and production requirements on our association. It implicates many of the legal issues raised today and presents grave concerns for our operations to the clerks and many other like and similarly situated organizations. The procedural history of the Municipal Clerks Association experience is quite similar to the circumstances of this case. In our action, the trial court granted an order to show cause, and after an in-camera document review, briefing, and oral argument, dismissed that action with prejudice, employing an analysis and reasoning that is instructive in the instant action. I will say that the judge below hinged the decision to the result from the appellate division in this case. Came a couple weeks after that decision. The trial court's rejection of the effort to foist OPR governmental records obligation on the Clerks Association was grounded in a factual analysis consistent with precedential case law, including and especially Fair Share Housing and Verrie v. Franklin Fire District. Key to that was the lack of a statutory impetus to create or act, which we consider to be an existential issue when evaluating whether an organization is subject to OPR or the common law. We attached the January 6, 2023 transcript. It's a 21-page oral argument and bench ruling, and we refer your honors to that thoughtful, succinct, and well-reasoned decision there. I particularly point the court to pages 15 and 16 of that decision, as well as 35 and 36, where the trial judge engaged in a very thorough analysis. In short, the court held that the Clerks Association, like numerous other small entities creating and operating in the 501c space, are not instrumentalities of a public agency, not a political subdivision, and not within or nor were they created by a combination of political subdivisions. Because the Municipal Clerks is not a public agency and does not take any government action, there is no impetus to create a check on it, which is the public policy backdrop. For the foregoing reasons, the Municipal Clerks Association of New Jersey respectfully requests the court provide a clear, narrowly tailored guidance on the applicability of OPRA and the common law right of access to government records consistent with the statutory language and the legislative intent. We ask that the criteria be firmly established to address with finality the perceived ambiguities that have given rise to hundreds of litigations throughout the state on these issues. The court's consideration is gratefully appreciated. This is submitted respectfully. I'm available for any questions.
Questions, anyone? Thank you, Mr. Clark. Ms. Thompson, brief rebuttal.
Just keep it very short, 30 seconds to speak solely to the question of government functioning and educating government lawyers about enforcing criminal law is a government function. And so I just want to point the court to page 18 of the Libertarian's brief, where they list several meetings where CPANJ met with the Attorney General to issue joint policies and guidelines for prosecutors to follow. So that, unless you have any other questions.
Thank you. Thank you to all counsel for the helpful arguments. We'll